well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. Going to be spending some time with a friend, Toby Leary, from Cape Gunworks and the Civil Rights Coalition up in Massachusetts. A lot to talk about, actually, including some very interesting news from Toby that might be, should be, I would say, concerning for the anti-gunners in the state, including Governor Maura Healey. I'm very excited to hear about this upcoming meeting that Toby has. You'll hear all about it in our conversation. Take a look and a listen. Toby, thanks so much for coming on the program. It's good to see you again.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for having me, Cam.
You bet. Looking forward to seeing you this weekend at the Goal 250 event in Boxborough, Massachusetts. You can find more information at goal.org. But Cape Gunworks also has a big anniversary coming up here in just a few weeks, right?
Yeah, we're really excited. We're Yankee Doodle Dandies. We were born on the 4th of July in 2014. But we close every time on that day and let people have a day off. So we're celebrating on July 11th, our 12th anniversary. And yeah, it's going to be awesome. Can't wait.
That is fantastic. All right. Well, I want to talk more about that as we get a little bit closer. But there's plenty of stuff to talk about right now. And you know, and I want to start actually by talking about what's going on in Los Angeles, because I know the last time we had you on the program, we were talking about Spencer Pratt as mayoral campaign and the videos that were getting, you know, a ton of attention. Now the votes are being tallied. And, you know, on election night, Spencer Pratt had about a 10-point lead over the third place a contender, and then the late votes start coming in, and boy, that lead just evaporated. Now looks like he's not going to make the runoff. I you know, and there are a lot of questions again about election integrity. It always seems like Democrats can find the votes where they need them. I'm not sure that Karen Bass actually wanted, I think she would have preferred to go up against Spencer Pratt. That's the one thing I'm not real sure about, this whole, you know, the theory that the election was rigged against Spencer Pratt, because I think that Bass actually would have preferred him instead of a more progressive challenger. But, you know, when you look at how that played out, and then you look at the referendum that we've got in Massachusetts coming up in November, trying to get the word out about the insane gun laws that are in effect here and the crippling effect that they're having on our right to keep and bear arms. I still think that Spencer Pratt's viral videos, that earned media campaign, it really does provide maybe a little bit of a guidebook for you guys in terms of, you know, going beyond a hostile media and certainly hostile politicians and speaking directly to the people of Massachusetts.
Yeah, we're definitely planning on doing that. We have something that materialized last week, Cam, and I don't know if you're familiar with the audit that voters approved by almost 3/4 of the state. 72% of voters in the last election approved the state auditor to go in and audit the legislature, the state house, and both the House and the Senate, as her job requires her to do. And they haven't allowed it for, I think it's 6 or 7 years now. And nothing to hide here, though, but they're obviously above board and transparent. But the voters finally said, hey, we want this audit. You're not going to hide forever. And so last week, the legislature in Massachusetts had a vote materialize out of nowhere. It came out in 24 hours, a bill that would restrict the auditor from auditing the state house. They would do their own kind of transparency type of thing. And then they also made a law so the courts can't overturn their decision. I don't know how that's not a separation of powers question, but that just goes to show how entrenched the state of Massachusetts is in preservation of power and denying people their legitimate voice at the poll. And just like you know, are aptly pointing out what's going on in California, all these states that, you know, use voter suppression tactics by either not requiring an ID and making it illegal to show one, and then also, you know, having these mail-in ballots that go out weeks ahead of the election. It's like they can just manufacture votes out of nowhere. And we see the same thing happening here in Massachusetts. We have these drop boxes all over the state where you can drop your ballot. They're unsolicited to the people's, you know, it comes right to your door. And so many people are concerned about that for the vote on November 3rd for the Civil Rights Coalition, because by all intents and purposes, there's a number out there that 72% that voted for the audit. Well, we did a poll and 73% of likely voters in the state of Massachusetts support the right to keep and bear arms in the Second Amendment. And so we know we are on the right side of history. We know we're on the right side of the momentum in this state. We know people support our rights. And a lot of times, even though we're a left-leaning state, that doesn't mean because they're liberal or Democrat or, you know, unenrolled that they don't support the right to keep and bear arms, but they never have a candidate that espouses pro-gun values. And also they're kind of side of the equation. I wouldn't say never. Turco is one up on the North Shore in Massachusetts who's a Democrat who's very pro-gun, but he is the outlier, unfortunately. And so, you know, we got a lot of work to do to educate the people of Massachusetts on why the right to keep and bear arms is so important and why it's on the ballot this November 3rd, because the State House refuses to listen to the will of the people. And that is a problem. I would say, you know, in some respects, Massachusetts has fallen when they no longer listen to the will of the people. And frankly, our whole form of government is based on we the people, not you the government.
Right. I mean, even if you go back to, like, you know, the town meetings, right? I mean, there's a long tradition in Massachusetts of, you know, and we don't live in a democracy. We live in a constitutional republic, a representative republic. But Massachusetts is got some you know, small d democratic origins in terms of the people do have a direct say in certainly their local government with the referendum process. This is a way to have a direct say in the state government. And I got to tell you, Toby, I mean, that's really disturbing. I had not heard about the legislature essentially trying to undo the will of the voters, nearly three quarters of the voters in Massachusetts. And you know, when you frame this question about repealing Chapter 135 as not just about the right to keep our arms, but again, about government accountability, about lawmakers being accountable to the will of the people, maybe that is a way to get non-gun owners interested in this issue and to make them aware of how little say the people have had regarding their right to keep and bear arms, a fundamental civil right.
Well, I think that two things have happened that have woken people up to that. Number one, in 2020, we all know what happened there. And we saw a lot of people that came into our shop and said, I'd like to buy a gun. And I said, okay, do you have a license? Like a driver's license? No, a license to carry. You can't buy one in the state of Massachusetts without that. And they said, well, how do I get that? Well, unfortunately, right now, we can't do any in-person you know, license to carry classes. And so your license, your rights have been suspended until the state figures out how to do this. And, you know, that was really the situation. The second part of this is people who I would say, my estimate is 50% of the signatures that we gathered almost 100,000 signatures to get this placed on the ballot and to get the law suspended. And I would say half of them were not gun owners, which is amazing because there's people out there that are not, they don't exercise their right to keep and bear arms. They don't own a gun. They don't really even have a desire to, but they want that option should they ever feel the need to. So they are also being kind of woken up to the process that is in place right now and all the hoops you got to jump through, all of the money that you have to pay, the long delays. It takes on average between 3 and 6 months to get a license to carry in the state of Massachusetts, depending on which town you live in. And it costs a minimum of $200 to $250. And that is unbelievable when you contrast that with any other constitutionally enumerated right. Number one, you know, if you just take the First Amendment and say, hey, you know, if you want to read the paper on Sunday morning, you got to have a license and, you know, you got to pay a fee and you got to get a background check and you got to go meet with the chief and tell him why you'd like to exercise this right. Everyone would go, this is nuts. This is absolutely insane. You're crazy. But we've allowed it to happen for so long in Massachusetts. We're all suffering from a form of Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah, I that's a really good way of putting it. You know, and unfortunately, I mean, I feel like in Virginia, we're catching up to you guys pretty quickly. You know, we had more than a dozen gun control bills get signed into law. They're supposed to take effect on July the 1st. We've got a number of Commonwealth attorneys and sheriffs who said, yeah, we're not going to enforce the you know, ban on assault firearms and large capacity magazines. There's some discussion about, you know, what that actually means, right? The ban is not a ban on possession. It's a ban on the manufacture, the sale, the transfer. There is a ban on the carrying of assault firearms in most public places. And so when, you know, Commonwealth attorneys and sheriffs say we're not going to enforce that, that's something specific. I actually spoke with one Commonwealth attorney who said that he also has concerns about the storage mandate, at least for storing guns in vehicles. He's not sure that he's going to enforce that law either. But we're starting to see this, you know, this civic disobedience, right? Not just civil disobedience, but officials saying, hey, I'm going to use the discretion that I have as the sheriff or as the district attorney. And I'm not going to target somebody who is a, you know, legal gun owner who may have violated one of these laws that I think is unconstitutional. Is anything like that possible, you think, in Massachusetts?
I actually think that's, it's going to be a hard condition to break into, but I do believe it's worth the try, so to speak. In other words, you know, if we really contrast what's happened in Massachusetts under Chapter 135, we have Airman Kyle Collada, who moved here from Arizona, who did 120 days in jail without bail. That's the result of Chapter 135 in action, even though the state violated their own law that they passed, which is that he has 40 days to apply for the license. He was here less than 48 hours and he was arrested for possessing guns that he lawfully and legally owned in Arizona. And he moved here, but they say you have 40 days to apply, but they, I guess you got to apply from jail. So once we start to really spotlight those laws and say to DAs and prosecutors and police departments, guys, you do realize you're treading on some very thin ice. Title 18, Section 242 of the U.S. Code says that any official under the color of law who violates somebody's constitutional rights is subject to a fine, imprisonment, or both, up to and including the death penalty if it leads to somebody's death. And we don't use that, unfortunately, because it's very hard to prove. But if we can take what's happening in Virginia, we can import that model into Massachusetts. We can put these government officials on notice and say, hey, your continuing enforcement of this is a violation of this person's not only civil rights, but their constitutionally enumerated rights. Here's the chapter and verse in Bruin that says any instrument that is used for defensive purposes can't be banned if it's in common and ordinary use. And if you continue to enforce that law, we are going to come after you. We are going to hold you accountable based on your deprivation of rights under the color of law. And I think that's something that really needs to be explored. I think that, you know, we should look at a partnership with the DOJ on this. I think that, you know, a lot of people are fed up with good people going to jail and bad people being let off. And, you know, politicians being able to run rampant all over people's rights, not to mention appointed or elected officials like DAs and prosecutors, they should be held accountable as well every time they violate someone's right under the color of law.
Yeah. You know, and I'm glad that you brought up DOJ because they have brought these pattern practice lawsuits. They're not just going after, you know, they're not just suing under the Second Amendment, but they are, as you say, suing after the allegation of a pattern of practice of infringing on people's rights. They have not filed suit in Virginia yet because in order to you know, allege that there's a violation, a pattern of practice, the law has to be in effect and being enforced. And right now it's not, doesn't take effect right until July the 1st. But Harmy Dillon has indicated that she will be suing the Commonwealth of Virginia. And I think you just made a great case. I mean, even the fact that it takes, you know, 3 to 6 months to obtain a license to carry, which is required in order to possess a firearm in the home as well in Massachusetts. That alone, I think, is a pattern in practice that of abusing our right to keep and bear arms. We've seen the DOJ actually already file suit in Los Angeles County over the slow walking of concealed carry permits. One of the allegations in the lawsuit against the U.S. Virgin Islands government is that that takes too long to process carry applications. So again, if you're talking about, in essence, a 6-month waiting period to exercise your right to keep and bear arms, because that's how long it takes you to get a license. I mean, I think this is the type of case that the DOJ would absolutely love to prosecute. Have you reached out to the DOJ Civil Rights Division at all?
Yeah, several times. And I actually have a meeting this week with Barry Arrington down.
Oh, good.
DC. I'll be flying down tomorrow. So I'm really looking forward to sitting down with him and coming up with a good strategy for Massachusetts. One thing I would like to point out that I think separates Massachusetts from a lot of other states that issue a license to carry is we are like New York and California. You can't even purchase a gun without that license. So whereas other states that issue a license to carry, which gives you kind of permission slip to go carry abroad in public, but you only need a driver's license in order to purchase and have in the home those guns. We can't possess ammunition. We can't possess magazines. We can't possess black powder components for deer hunting with a muzzleloader. You can't possess caps and balls that date back to the 18th century when the country was founded without a government mandated permission slip, like an FID card or a license to carry. You can't buy them, you can't possess them, you can't own them. And I don't think that our founders had the intent of making sure that everybody jumped through a whole bunch of hoops in order to exercise that right. In fact, it, you know the verbiage better than anyone, it shall not be infringed. Now, I know there are people who want to make it encumbered by all kinds of requirements, and they love Massachusetts. And unfortunately, this virus has spread to places like Virginia, as you pointed out. We've all seen it happen in Colorado, that used to be a very free state when it came to the Second Amendment. Now they have very much Massachusetts type of laws, Washington state. So this is something that'll spread like a cancer if we don't cut it out now and deal with it. And unfortunately, Massachusetts is ground zero. And the politicians have got away with infringing on the rights of the people for so long. It's time the people act and say enough is enough. And that's what we're doing.
Absolutely. And you don't just have to be a Massachusetts resident to do this. I was talking with William Kirk from Washington Gun Law last night. I was on his program and we were talking about Virginia, and he asked, he said, what's your recommendation for gun owners? And I said, join a state level group. If you're not a member of, the Virginia Citizens Defense League or Virginia Shooting Sports Association, join, sign up to become a member of one of the national organizations that's fighting in Virginia. But also, again, if you live outside of the state of Virginia, support the cause, because as you say, this spreads. And, I would make the very same recommendation. If you live in Texas, you live in Oklahoma, you live in Mississippi, you live in a Second Amendment friendly state, where you're not directly concerned about attacks on your right to keep your arms right there in your home state right now, help out in Massachusetts. Join the Civil Rights Coalition. Join the Gun Owners Action League or Commonwealth 2A, and help you guys take that fight to the gun control lobby, to the anti-gun politicians. Because, as you say, this cancer spreads. It doesn't just stay in Massachusetts. These bad ideas get exported. And I can tell you firsthand, living in Virginia, when the anti-gunners take power and they've got the votes, they're not moderating their policies right now. It's not like, okay, we'll do a little bit this year and we'll come back and we'll do a little bit more next year. But, we really don't want to alienate voters. They don't care. Again, we had over a dozen gun control bills signed into law this year. We have, in pretty much one fell swoop, gone from a state with pretty good gun laws to being like New York or South Massachusetts, right? We're not quite as bad as you guys, but this was one session and they're coming back for more. Right. So it is incumbent on us to to take the fight, you know, to the gun control lobby and to the gun control advocates and their strongholds. And Massachusetts, unfortunately, is one of their strongholds. But, you know, you talk about the 100,000 people who signed the petition to put the repeal of 135 on the ballot this November. There is an appetite for reform. I think there is an appetite to claw back our rights. And again, it doesn't matter where in the country you live, you can be a part of that effort as well.
Yeah, man, I hope people really take that seriously. The best way to buffer this coming to your state is to fight it where the fight is. So yeah, by all means, we will put the money to good use. We have a lot of work to do in the last 5 months of the campaign to educate and tell people why their rights are worth defending. But we're going to win this, Cam. I'm confident of that. We have momentum on our side. 73% of likely voters support the right to keep and bear arms in the Second Amendment in the state of Massachusetts. And I think the government's a little worried that they shot one too many over the bow, and the people are angry and upset at their rights being infringed on. And even it's amazing how sometimes politics makes interesting bedfellows, but you know, people from all over the spectrum are on our side and supporting this cause. And I believe we can win and win big in November. We definitely need to get the word out. We need to counter the messaging, which is just blatant lies by the opposite side. Yes for a Safe MA is anything but. It is not safe, as we talked about last time I was on your show. We saw it in Cambridge, where the effects of Chapter 135 was on full display when Tyler Brown shot up Memorial Drive. And, you know, meanwhile, good people get put in jail and, you know, for technical violations of this unconstitutional law. So
yeah,
we got some work to do, but I'm happy and optimistic that we're going to be able to do it. But I would covet everybody's support. Throw me a couple bucks and we'll put that to good use by all means.
So how can folks sign up? How can they help support the cause there, the Civil Rights Coalition?
Yeah, they can go to thecivilrightscoalition.com. There's a donate button right there. You can also sign up to stay up to date with what we got going on. You can check out our calendar. We have all kinds of events now till election day. And we have, you know, a volunteer if you're local and you want to do standouts and door knocking and hold a sign or distribute some signs around the state. And as soon as we get the ballot number, we're going to print all those signs. But again, that's where the money comes in. We're going to need resources to do all that. So thecivilrightscoalition.com is the best place to go to donate. And we'll punch way above our weight class and make the money go to good use. Very low overhead.
Well, Toby, again, thank you for everything that you're doing. And thank you to all of the grassroots volunteers there in Massachusetts who are fighting the good fight. I'm looking forward to seeing you this weekend, and I'm looking forward to having you back on the program again here in a couple of weeks, where we can talk a little bit more about Cape Gunworks and the anniversary celebration, as well as the efforts to ensure that people can, I wouldn't even say continue exercising their Second Amendment rights, but can start to exercise their Second Amendment rights the way the founders intended.
Amen to that. Love it.
Toby, thanks so much for your time, man. It's always good talking with you today.
Yes, sir. Take care.
And thanks once again to Toby for joining me on the program. I am looking forward to seeing him up there in Boxborough, Massachusetts for the Goal 250 event on Saturday. I leave Saturday morning, and I got to tell you, I'm going to be traveling light, but I'm going to be taking my modern rugged bag with me just in case I've got to do some riding. I'll have my laptop and everything inside, from city streets to mountain trails, even airlines. Your gear should go wherever life takes you. And that is why at Modern Rugged Leather, every bag is handcrafted from premium, responsibly sourced leather. It's designed to look sharp, last long, and tell a story all its own. Every stitch, every buckle, every strap, reflecting timeless craftsmanship, and it's backed by a lifetime warranty, because quality shouldn't quit when the adventure begins. So whether it's the boardroom or the back roads, Modern Rugged Leather helps you carry confidence every step of the way. Modern Rugged Leather, modern style, timeless durability, backed for life. Life takes you places. Make sure your gear keeps up. You can shop the full collection and find yours today at modernrugged.com. Again, that is modernrugged.com. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We will start there with a story out of Texas, a disturbing story. Headline from the New York Post: repeat offender on probation allegedly kills father who tracked his stolen truck using GPS. Yeah. And this guy, who is now accused of murder, should not have been out on the street. 56-year-old Louis Araiba allegedly tracked down his stolen car and confronted the person accused of stealing it, London Hogan Sr., who allegedly then shot and killed Araiba, who was pronounced dead after being taken to a local hospital. This was apparently it started out as a carjacking. Harris County Sheriff's Office telling Fox 26 that Arabia's son was putting gas into a Chevy Silverado when Hogan showed up, allegedly pulled a gun, then took the pickup truck. Arabia and a friend then tracked the pickup truck using GPS, led him to the area where it was being driven. The car being driven by Arabia was involved in a collision with the Chevy Silverado, which ended up disabling the vehicle. According to the sheriff's office, Arabia then chased a male and a female suspect who got out of the stolen truck. And deputies say that is when Hogan fired multiple shots, striking and killing Arabia and I believe injuring another person as well. Hogan charged with murder, aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, aggravated robbery with a deadly weapon. I'm surprised that he has not been hit with a felon possession charge, but that might be forthcoming. According to the New York Post, Hogan has a lengthy criminal history, including a case less than 3 years ago, just about 2.5 years ago, November 12, 2023. He was given a deferred adjudication, basically 5 years of probation after a guilty plea for assault of a family or household member impeding breath or circulation. Strangling a family member, and nothing more than 3 years probation. In September of 2020, he had cases involving felon in possession of a weapon and other unauthorized use of a vehicle dismissed, as well as possession of a controlled substance. 2016, he was guilty of possession of a controlled substance. October of 2015, possession of a controlled substance, another guilty plea. 2009, a guilty plea to a burglary. And despite during a hearing on Monday, where Hogan had his charges read to him, a judge reiterated that he's on deferred adjudication, says, looks like you're on a five-year felony deferred for assault impeding breath. And Mr. Hogan entered into that deferred sentence March 27th, 2024. So, again, a little more than 2 years into this five-year probationary sentence, Hogan is now accused of violating that probation in the most heinous way possible. Killing another individual. Now, you know, we can argue, given that Arabia's son was carjacked at gunpoint, was it wise for his father to have gone after that car, knowing that the driver was armed? It's not known whether Arabia had a gun with him, or whether his friend had a gun with him. I understand the impulse. I do, because often, you know, in situations like this, I mean, you can contact police and nothing's going to happen. Nothing's, I mean, you know, they're not going to put out a BOLO alert. They're not going to deploy every resource to try to track down that stolen vehicle. We have seen plenty of other instances before where somebody's had their car stolen. They provide this information to police. They say, I've got a GPS device. I can tell you where the car is located. And it's just not a priority, right? So I understand the frustration. I also understand the anger that a father feels when their child has been threatened. I just don't know that this was the wisest course of action. Should not have led to Arabia's loss of life. Not excusing or condoning his murder. But again, you know, if you are going to put yourself in a situation like that, please, please, at the very least, make sure that you are able to protect yourself, able to defend yourself. And honestly, I would say if you know that that person has a gun, your vehicle is not worth your life. It's as frustrating as infuriating as it may be. Sometimes the better thing to do is to step away. And I think, you know, that's something that every good firearm instructor teaches us. The best way to, you know, survive a gunfight is to not be in a gunfight, to not put yourself in that situation. And I wish that this had had a different outcome, because it sounds like Mr. Rebia was a good dad, good guy. Amber Burrow, who is related to Rebia, wrote on Facebook that Luis died doing exactly what he did every day of his life, protecting others. He was a hero down to his very last breath, a pillar of our community, backbone of our family, a man whose selflessness impacted countless lives. Luis never hesitated to help those in need. He gave of himself freely and served others without question. And I think the world is a lesser place without Luis Rebia in it. On to today's Armed Citizen story, where another father acted to protect their child, this time in Riverside County, California, where a father shot and killed an armed intruder inside his home with his daughter. We're getting more information, by the way, from the neighbors than we did from the Riverside County Sheriff's Office in their initial release. This happened Friday. I wrote about this at Bearing Arms yesterday. And what we knew at the time was that there was a homeowner in San Jacinto, California, who was hanging out with his neighbors Friday night. He hears screams from his house, hears gunshots, runs over. There's a guy with a shotgun in his home. The homeowner shoots and kills the guy with a shotgun after the guy with the shotgun shot at him. And then it turns out the home invader's girlfriend was found about a half mile away with knife-related injuries. She was taken to a hospital. Last report was listed as stable. But there were a lot of unanswered questions. Like, that's what we knew. We knew the name of the guy, 45-year-old Israel Martinez. Sheriff's Department said he didn't have any connection to this home or the homeowner. But that's kind of all we knew. And so this did get a lot of media attention, surprisingly, for a defensive gun use. A lot of times these stories aren't even covered in the local media. But I think every news outlet, at least every television news outlet in Los Angeles, covered this story. KTLA actually went out to the neighborhood, spoke with some neighbors, and was sort of able to fill in some of the gaps. So Robert Durami said that the homeowner's goal was to get his daughter out safely, regardless of what happened to him. He said, "I'm shattered for this family because they're good people." It was just before 10:30 Friday night. Again, the father's hanging out with neighbors outside. His wife's there too. His wife goes inside the home to charge her phone, and she comes face to face with this guy who had broken in, apparently grabbed one of the homeowner's shotguns, who then started shooting. Durami said, from what I understand, the guy tried shooting at her as she started running. And then when she goes into the garage, he yells out, "There's a stranger in the house with a gun." Now, the teenage daughter is still inside the home as well. So husband and dad runs over. Durami said the guy started loading up again. He got in there and the guy shot at Chris, the homeowner. He dropped, got up, and he unloaded at him and got the guy down. Durami said that's when Chris was able to get his daughter out of the house unharmed. Deputy showed up moments later, found the suspect, again, Ismael Martinez, dead. Investigators said that even before this happened, the suspect and his girlfriend had gotten into an argument about a half mile from the family's home. He assaulted her with a knife. She was taken to the hospital. They still don't know why Martinez ended up in this particular home. They, again, no connection to the homeowner or their family. They say the invasion appears to be completely random. But Durami said, you know, Chris, the armed citizen, did more than just save his own family. He said, because if he didn't take that guy down and that guy took him down, his next step was probably to come over to one of our houses and unload, because at that point he had a death wish. He didn't care. KTLA says, while no charges have been brought against the homeowner, the Riverside County DA's office said they're currently reviewing the case. I don't think there's any question that the homeowner acted in lawful self-defense in defense of others. My concern is that because Martinez was able to get a shotgun apparently from the home, that a zealous prosecutor could say, well, you violated California storage laws. Under California law, unless that gun is on your person or under your immediate control, it is supposed to be locked up, inaccessible to others. So Martinez was able to get a hold of a shotgun inside the home. A DA could decide to go after the armed citizen for violating California storage laws. The good news is that a first offense is punishable only by a fine. So the homeowner would not be facing any jail time, would not be facing the loss of their Second Amendment rights, might be facing, again, some financial repercussions. I would like to think that the DA would not pursue charges in a case like this, but this is California. You never know. So we'll keep our eyes open for any more details out of San Jacinto, California. And finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing able to do the right thing. Another neighbor, this time in New York, acting to save others, as a Dryden man faces attempted murder charges in an alleged fire attack. I mean, this guy essentially tried to immolate his family. Happened back on June the 6th. The man accused in this crime is a 53-year-old Matthew Deming. There was a domestic incident. There was an order of protection that had been taken out against Deming. He was not allowed to go to this home. Didn't matter. Again, an order of protection is a piece of paper. It's not a suit of armor. So it's shortly after 10 o'clock in the morning on June the 6th, Deming shows up at this home. Argument ensued. According to the sheriff's office, Deming then poured gasoline on the woman and the two children, as well as the house. He's accused then of trying to ignite the gasoline with a lighter. A neighbor who wants to remain anonymous said another neighbor had told him that something was happening down the street. He said, when I got out of the car, he said, I didn't see the kids initially, but the kids were in between, and he's throwing gasoline on them. And this neighbor said he tried to intervene as Deming was trying to light the gas. He said, I grabbed him. He threw the gas can, tried to light the lighter. Neighbor said he was able to pull Deming away before police arrived. I guess he was not able to hang on to Deming, but deputies found Deming nearby and took him into custody without incident. The kids, by the way, 5 and 6 years old. The neighbor says that they're not physically hurt, except that the emotional toll already present. CNY Central asked him whether the outcome could have been different had he not gone to the home, and he said, yeah, somebody probably would have died. And it sounds like that is very well the case. Maybe not just one person, but maybe as many as three people. Deming is facing charges, attempted murder, as well as endangering the welfare of a child. He is currently being held in the Tompkins County Jail on a $100,000 cash bail. I am deeply disturbed by anybody who would try to, harm a child as retribution, as punishment, whatever. This is just a disturbing story all around. But thankfully, that neighbor was in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. And at risk to himself, it should be noted. You know, if Deming had actually managed to ignite those gas fumes, Deming himself might have gone up in flames, but, the neighbor would have been at risk as well. So putting his own safety aside to save the lives of others, that's a pretty good deed. And we thank him for his very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. Coming up on tomorrow's show, we're going to be talking about what's going on in the Virgin Islands. Kosi Ono is going to be with us from Virgin Islands Safe Gun Owners. There is for over a year now, they've had this sort of omnibus gun control bill that's been floating around. Even before the DOJ filed suit against the U.S. Virgin Islands, they've been looking at passing a ban on so-called assault weapons, large capacity magazines, adding more sensitive spaces. This bill has been amended a number of times. It's gone up for a hearing, and then they've yanked it from the calendar on multiple occasions. They're playing games with gun owners because it's a pain in the neck to get to these legislative hearings. A lot of times you got to take a plane ride to get to where the hearings take place. Cancel a short notice. You're out several hundred dollars. The runaround that they're giving gun owners is, again, it's infuriating. And now Kosi says they've got the text of a brand new proposed amendment that once again completely disregards our right to keep and bear arms and is meant to make it as difficult as possible to exercise our Second Amendment rights. So we're going to be talking about what's going on in the Virgin Islands with the Kose Ono coming up on tomorrow's Bearing Arms Cam and Company. Be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day today that we are keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation, including, excuse me, a bit of good news out of California and a challenge to the state's 11% excise tax on firearms and ammunition. We've got to that story and much more for you there at BearingArms.com. If you like what you see, we'd also encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. Just go to BearingArms.com/subscribe, use the promo code FIGHT, and take 60% off your membership. We've got a lot of great benefits no matter what tier of support you choose, and you'll be supporting the work we're doing at Bearing Arms, and I want to thank you for that because it does indeed make a difference. Have a great rest of your 2A Tuesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.